Yeah, that's Israel Gutierrez on like his Cayman Island of choice. That is Kevin Clark floating along the East River.
My shirt actually has like toucans on it, believe it or not, and like watermelons and palm leaves. Because. Just because.
I mean, you are living a vacation of a life that is now being interrupted by the fact that there are so many like real stories to talk about, big stories to talk about. We will get to those, but we need to start with this Urban Meyer thing, Alabaster. Like, I want to start with the thing that I can't stop texting and talking about in real life. So please, can we do that first?
That's right. And, you know, I would say that Urban Meyer's ignominious demise in Jacksonville has been talked about a lot, and we didn't think it could get any lower, but The Athletic did a wonderful profile on his tenure. And our question for you is, what's your biggest takeaway from The Athletic's piece on Urban Meyer's tenure in Jacksonville?
So, first takeaway, ignominious, just one of many SFW synonyms that we can use to describe Urban Meyer at this point. But when you are so ignominious that, like, the leaks keep on coming, it's hilarious, right? Like, at a certain point, you realize, oh, the floodgates had existed, and now they're all down. And so here comes Jason Jenks and Mike Sando at The Athletic publishing this report with so many things that we should talk about. But the number one thing has to be the fact that Urban Meyer reportedly did not know who Aaron Donald really was, which is amazing, right?
Unbelievable.
Like, it's like you go to the ER, and your doctor walks in, and he's like, so, what's the deal with this heart thing? Is that going to be a problem for us? Because that's the quote. Meyer reportedly asking about Aaron Donald. Who's this 99 guy on the Rams? I'm hearing he might be a problem.
I immediately assumed, Pablo, that it was fake, that he was just trying to be a smart aleck. But apparently Kevin knows that that's not true. Like, he was actually this naive.
I checked on it, and this is a pattern of behavior that is consistent, okay? My first takeaway, Pablo, I was jealous. Because you think about people, like, you know when people are starting a Sopranos watch and you know they're going to experience things that you felt 10, 15 years ago for the first time, and you feel that tinge of sadness. Urban Meyer got to experience NFL football for the first time all at once, learn who all these great players were, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes. Could you imagine?
Wow, they're amazing.
Could you imagine watching a Super Bowl? And you see Aaron Donald make those plays, the game winner, for instance, against Joe Burrow, and you go, I heard about that guy a couple weeks ago. I know that guy. Someone told
that
me about
guy,
that guy.
Did that guy win an award for this?
Wow.
He should. He really
Speaking
should.
Of
they
the
should
devil.
Get another
Someone
season
was just telling me
out of him.
He was good. Yeah. Also, and listen, genius is never appreciated in their time. That's what cancel culture is. Mm-hmm. He was right about Aaron Donald. He was a problem. Urban Meyer knows ball. He identified Aaron Donald as a guy who might be good, and he was correct. Suck on that, haters.
Some of these almost feel like a guy who just isn't all there. And you know, people can just guess and say, oh, you know, maybe he had some health issues, maybe. But it just sounds like that. It sounds like a guy who, you know, at Florida and maybe even Ohio State, or maybe even before both of those, got away with so much stuff that he just thought he was free and clear and was Teflon and could get away with anything, even though the further we go into this, the more and more there is social media, the more there's cameras on you, the more the things you can't get away with. He just seemed oblivious to all of it and said, hey, I'm just going to do me. It's worked well so far.
No, but the way he went about like running a team, it either was the result of someone with actual just like medical maladies that prevented him from like thinking appropriately, or a guy who was so deluded into his own grandeur that he created what one veteran member of the football operations staff told The Athletic was the most toxic environment he has ever been a part of. And there was something to the details here that is both, to Izzy's general point there, both unbelievably funny and also just like terrible. Because the way he coached Kevin, the way he motivated, it all felt like someone who was used to bullying teenagers and tried it on adults. And we had hypothesized this. Yes, we had hypothesized this wouldn't go well. But the degree to which this happened terribly, and again, tragicomically, according to people like DJ Chark, one of the great stars in this Rewatchables episode that was Urban Meyer's experience in the NFL, Kevin, like, it's pretty jaw-dropping.
It's unbelievable what he thought he could get away with, to Izzy's point. You know, it's interesting to me because, Izzy, you were around the Dolphins when Nick Saban was the coach, and then he left, and there were still Saban fans because he put Jason Taylor in a position to win. He made certain guys better. He understood how to use Ronnie Brown. No one. There is not one person in Jacksonville who's like, you know, he did some good things. He did some good things.
Where's the hive? Where is the urban hive?
There were
definitely guys with Nick Saban who didn't like the way he treated them.
Right.
But it wasn't everybody. And it certainly wasn't like this childish, I'm going to fire you. Right.
He knew what he was doing. That's the difference. And it's amazing to me because I thought that when Urban Meyer came into this whole thing, there are three types of college coaches. One is Jimmy Johnson, come in and crush, win Super Bowls. The other is Nick Saban, who came in, realized he couldn't control his own destiny, and then just left and realized this is not for me. And then there's someone like a Bobby Petrino or a Lou Holtz. When Lou Holtz quit the Jets, at the end, I think it was December of his first year in the NFL, he held a press conference and he said, and I'm not making this up, God did not put me on this earth to coach in the NFL, okay? That he went back to college. That is the bucket Urban Meyer is in. God did not put him on this earth to coach in the pros. They put him on the earth to bully teenagers, to not know who people were, to eat pizza on a golf cart, and look like a weirdo.
To tell NFL players specifically also that, quote, do you know what would happen if I cut you guys? You couldn't get a job paying more than $15 an hour. Which is Izzy. I mean, that, it's like,
that's
okay,
the worst.
You're a terrible bully, but also, like, can you update your material? Like, why do you think that that's the
worst possible
thing
you can say to disrespect everybody else in that room? You're only here because of your athletic ability. You have nothing else to offer the world. I would have walked out right there. I would have. And it's when, you know, Kevin, you mentioned, you know, having me been around Nick Saban, I was more around Urban Meyer when he was a Florida Gators head coach, driving up and back and forth to Gainesville because they were so good. And you got that sense of arrogance from him then. And it wasn't necessarily an arrogance like, hey, are you hiding? It was just, he thinks he's better than everybody. And that just seemed to continue to grow as he got to Ohio State and then, you know, with this Jacksonville job. So to tell everybody else that you are worthless outside of what you can offer me and the way I can do it, and I'm going to bully you the entire time, I don't know, like, how that's exactly how you go about leading men, but somehow he found a way to do that, you know, for however many years he did it.
Kevin, this quote from John Brown, speaking of Urban Meyer's tenure at Florida, again, the University of Florida, a state in the South. Urban Meyer tells Trevor Lawrence reportedly, quote, about wide receiver John Brown, who ran the wrong route at practice, quote, you've got to slow it down for him. These boys from the South, their transcripts ain't right. End quote, which is an amazing cell phone. Also, like, beyond the attempt at just, like, trashing your own players, you also trashed yourself and your old players back at Florida.
It shows, listen, I already knew all of this, but it shows how screwed up the power dynamic is in college. Because the comfort in saying something like this, that, as Izzy said, should get some walkouts, the fact that he thought he could get away with this stuff shows you how screwed up that entire level of football is. And shows you that there's almost a cult of personality that you develop when you're at the college game. There's a cult of the coach. That's ending at the pro level. John Gruden is ending. Urban Meyer is ending. It's over. Sean McVay doesn't act like this. Sean McVay is a type A weirdo, but he doesn't act like this. That's what the modern NFL is. Urban Meyer doesn't know who Aaron Donald is. He doesn't know who Debo Samuel is, whatever, Jamal Adams. That's fine. But he also doesn't know how modern football works, and that was his grave error, and that quote is just a great example of that.
The type F weirdo, Izzy, that Urban Meyer is. Now, if we're going to rank the weirdos and, like, what letter grade they get, the type F weirdo here, does this mean that we're not going to get Urban Meyer running practices anywhere like it's Squid Game anymore? Because he was doing the thing where it's like, there's a winner and the loser, only one of you can survive. And he would call it out on a speakerphone, apparently, and stuff.
Yeah. I'm the loser here because now with Sopranos and Squid Game, so it's two shows that I haven't watched that I can't really bounce off of that.
Wait, you're the guy? You could start a Sopranos watch today?
I am jealous.
I could. I'm not going to. It's too long. It's a lot of seasons there. I'm not going to, so let's not even entertain that.
It goes quickly.
I will say probably the biggest winner on the field on all this could be Trevor Lawrence, who admitted that things weren't really going very well with Urban, and it probably sort of delayed his growth because, I mean, look, it's not like he was Ryan Leaf, like, terrible right off the bat or anything like that. But he was supposed to be the sure thing, and we got far less of the sure thing. And now you start to wonder, hey, it's already probably the worst coached position in sports, but now you start to see, hey, maybe this guy was part of the reason why Trevor Lawrence wasn't what we thought he was going to be.
Urban went from
a guy I'd like to coach maybe my NFL team to a guy who maybe I want him to coach my college team to now he's not even coming with me to NFL trivia night. He's out.
No,
he can't.
Kevin,
oh, God. He'd be the last pick.
I can't even trust him to be on the boats that are riding behind you in the background because of that video where there was, like, him on, like, a Big Ten Network interview with a guy allegedly just, like, hitting a bong in the background. Like, none of the places that I thought Urban Meyer might have thrived, he can thrive anymore.
Guess who's qualified for a $15 an hour job? Urban Meyer.
But just barely hanging on to
barely.
That. I mean, Alabaster, like, what was your favorite part of this whole thing? Because I feel like there are layers to this. There's the whole, like, James Robinson misuse of him, like, being injured at that game. That was the thing Trevor Lawrence spoke up about. There was all of the stuff about him just condescending to everybody who worked with him and all of them hating him. But what was your particular favorite
part? There's a lot to work here, and I really do. I agree with you, Pablo, that the star of this article was DJ Chark, someone who we really liked coming into this season as sort of a big deep threat for Trevor Lawrence. And his quote saying, Urban came in and said he was going to maximize our potential, and I truly don't think a single player maximized their value on the Jags this year could not be a bigger indictment. And this is the guy who, in the blocking drill, winners and losers, a one-on-one version of the Oklahoma drill, Urban Meyer made continually block as a 6'4 deep threat, even though he had a broken finger that would require surgery and derail Urban Meyer's offense over the course of the season. He could be like the worst manager of practices and rosters and professionals that we've ever gotten access to. It seemed like from day one, no one respected him.
I mean, we just spent 12 minutes, Alabaster, to your point, talking about Urban Meyer's various mistakes and weirdnesses, and we didn't even refer back to the fact that, Kevin, he kicked a kicker, which got reconfirmed in this story. Like, I don't know if that was ever in dispute truly, but this story goes ahead and says, yes, Urban Meyer did, in fact, tell his former kicker, quote, hey, dipshit, make your bleeping kicks. And then
way to maximize potential there.
Well, also, if you're going to kick anybody, make sure it's the guy who can't kick hard back. Like, that's just poor management skills, kind of what we're talking about earlier. Also, the other thing about the Josh Lambeau kicking story, the kicking the kicker story, is that when Lambeau was like, don't kick me, Meyer said, I can kick you whenever I want. What does he think head coaching entitles him to exactly? Like, this is a guy, I think this is a guy who actually took a head coaching job to have that sort of power over people, right? That's it. He wanted to be a bully, and so he went into a profession, and he was very, very good at it for 20 years. He went into a profession where he got to bully people. Then, of all people, he fell on his sword because of Josh Lambeau. That's the difference between college and the NFL, is you can win power struggles with quarterbacks, you can win power struggles with ADs, with school presidents. You get to the NFL, you lost a power struggle to a kicker, buddy.
I would argue he was not very good at bullying. I would argue there are third graders with more wit and are better at bullying than this guy. Make your damn kicks and then kicking the kicker. Like,
But Alabaster, as someone who often feels, I presume, like he works with people who have unlimited kicks in their like contract written out, like, what is your perspective on this?
I completely agree. The thing that got me, though, is, like, to your point, these quotes are so ridiculous, they almost seem fake. They seem someone who's so detached from the concept of bullying that these weren't even, like, cutting remarks. I want to put down one
more. Ball sack sports-y.
Yes,
I'll throw that out there. Of this felt at first like, oh, we're ball sack sports right
ball
now.
Ball sack sports? Their quotes seem more real. And, like, let me show you a quote that I think adds to that. Urban Meyer, to a room full of staff, including his scouts. I hate scouts. Scouts are lazy, said by Urban Meyer, who by all reports was the laziest person in the room.
It's
if
because,
a scout asked
him
who's this 99, he would get fired right away, right?
Yes. He thought that because the scouts were always making up players like Aaron Donald and Deebo Samuel. And he said, these guys aren't real. Jamal Adams? Are
Deebo,
you kidding me? You're lazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But he's done, though, right? This is the end of Urban Meyer. This is the last hilarious ending, right?
Well, I mean, I feel like, I don't know, I haven't checked Dan Dockich's Twitter account lately. I feel like he may have another act on increasingly smaller and more extreme platforms. But yeah, Kevin, right? Like, the NFL, I mean, we'll get to these other stories in a bit, but like, the NFL is obviously the single best refutation of the fact that there are, in fact, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth acts in American life. It does feel like Urban Meyer has exhausted all of those acts, though, at this point.
The NFL is desperate to rehabilitate images. They're desperate to have retread coaches, guys who the owners want to put no thought into their hire. Let's take that guy who failed somewhere else. Maybe he learned his lessons, right? Urban Meyer is so beyond the pale. He's not even Nick Saban analyst territory right now. He's nothing. His job now, he took it a couple days ago. He's working on the board of an NIL collective at Ohio State.
Yep.
Like that's his last chapter for the next 20 years is that kind of BS. He can never take him seriously ever again.
But he was so close to just having this life where he could just go on TV and sound brilliant and no one would have known the difference. That's like the real sliding doors moment here, right? Urban Meyer heat checked his own expertise, yeah, and mm-hmm, thought to himself, because people think I'm great on TV, I can go into a locker room and just be myself. And he found out that was the opposite. Yeah.
I would say brilliant is a strong word, because even when he was on TV, probably didn't sound brilliant. I'm just wondering, like, what was the one incident that would have allowed him to return? That would have, if you just erased that part, was it a part with the woman at the bar? I mean, the grossest part that he, you know, ended up lying about as well? Or was it more of a football thing? Was it the way he treated them? Because I feel like the way he treated football players in 10 years, 5 years, people are going to get over it.
Okay, so you asked what the incident was that allowed him to not return. It was losing football games.
That's it, huh?
Because if he went 11-2, oh man, he's tough to get along with, but he gets results.
Right.
It had nothing to do with the practices, had nothing to do with the Dublin, Ohio bars, and everything to do with what's right there in that corner. He went 2-11 before being fired.
Yeah, Al Vester.
If he would have gone 500, maybe he would have survived this. Didn't even have to go 11-2 in that stretch.
No, I love I long for the idea that the tribe has spoken. They voted Urban Meyer out, but no, that's not actually what happened here. The tribe is just gossiping because the guy lost enough football games for this to all now be in the rearview mirror.
And that's almost what I wonder about this a tiny bit. Like, we've seen sort of the fleshy underbelly of college sports bring these guys back before. I mean, obviously it's not to this extent of ineptitude, but we saw Rick Pitino go and try and institute a full court press with the Celtics, not make it through a season because his team didn't respect him. Then he had his
a full court press of a different
kind. Yes, his moment of shame. His short moment
seconds
of shame.
Yeah.
And he's back at Iona. He brought them to the NCAA tournament. And I think if he wanted, he could have a job at any Power 5 school in about 15 seconds. So why can't that happen for
Rick Pitino? There was a picture of Rick Pitino on Florida's basketball court the other day before they played each other in the NIT, and I got so scared. I was like, what? Is this what we're going with to replace Mike White? Oh, okay, no, he's just playing a basketball game there. But, I don't know. By the way, I would go with brief instead of short incident, right? Because we don't know about that necessarily. We just know it was brief. but I don't think those are – you think those are the same? I mean, like, so first of all, Urban Meyer would have to go and work. Like, that's the part that he doesn't seem to be wanting to do, work to get his reputation fixed at some small or mid-major school. I don't think he's got the ability.
No, Kevin, what Urban Meyer has to do, he's going to have to work his way through the podcast circuit.
Yep.
He's going to have to gain credibility with all of you guys. He's going to have to show that he's been grinding tape, that he knows who Aaron Donald is. And when he gets the credibility among NFL hipsters, only then can he begin to rehabilitate the thing that most people have questions about now.
It'd be funny if you went for Orlovsky and started just a Twitter account. Started a Twitter account where he's at his home, okay, and he's breaking down film, but he makes no mention of the Athletic story. But like, the first five videos are just in-depth breakdowns of Aaron Donald, Debo Samuel, Jamal Adams. And he's just like, I love these guys. I've been thinking about them for a long time, for years.
Known them forever.
You know, Aaron Donald, Pittsburgh. I was watching him, you know, in college, in high school. And just that's how he reestablishes credibility. 45-second Twitter clips. You're on your way, Urban. Let's do this.
Small counterpoint.
Good idea.
If he goes full Orlovsky, he might not want to call Carson Wentz a gold jacket guy. Just a piece of advice for you, Urban Meyer, if you start grinding tape.
Yeah, you never go full Orlovsky. It's a good reminder.
At least he knows who he is.
Good point.
Yeah, it's fair.
All right, guys, you ready to move on?
What does
Yeah,
he know,
I guess.
If he said gold jacket,
I don't think he does. All right, guys, we're going to move on to the biggest NFL story over the weekend, which was the trade of Deshaun Watson. And our question... What are your thoughts on the trade and his new contract, which makes him, you know, the richest quarterback in the NFL?
Okay, so we're now at the serious story. We're changing gears here to the thing that actually demands our attention as rigorous thinkers and journalists who aren't just here to laugh at the absurdities of the NFL, because the absurdities of the NFL can also be horrifying. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to begin, I think, by doing something that I feel is not just dutiful, but fascinating, which is to just outline like what Deshaun Watson has been accused of, right? Because over a couple of years, Deshaun Watson largely went on Instagram to hire reportedly, allegedly, 40 plus different massage therapists. This is wildly out of the normal for a star athlete or for any person. And the result of those over 40 massage therapist sessions was 22 different civil lawsuits alleging some kind of sexual misconduct. On top of that, there were 10 criminal charges. Those charges, as of a Friday ago, have been dismissed by a grand jury, which found that there is not probable cause presented by the prosecutors to substantiate moving forward those cases. But the 22 active civil lawsuits remain. And also, it's worth pointing out that there are multiple other accusers who never sought financial compensation of any kind, never filed a civil lawsuit. And Jenny Vrentis's reporting at Sports Illustrated and the New York Times substantiated that. All of which is to say that we went from that to now, Kevin, as all those allegations about Watson ranging from touching women with the genitals to forced oral sex, just like truly awful stuff, we get to an historic transaction between the Cleveland Browns and the Houston Texans, as all of this is still, in the civil court at least, very much going on.
To not only get more guaranteed money than anybody in history, but $80 million more than anybody in history guaranteed is reckless by the Browns. It's going all in a situation that you cannot know everything about going forward. There's still 22 pending civil cases. There's a genre of person popping up, and they pop up all the time. They're on social media. They're on TV sometimes. And around these cases, and they say, let me tell you something. The NFL is a business. There's a reality, and then there's the NFL reality. And just because you can explain something that sucks doesn't mean I can't say that it sucks. This sucks. What the Browns have done, their behavior in going, basically going above and beyond, getting themselves back into the Deshaun Watson situation by getting his agent on the phone and giving him more money, more years, more guarantees. They've made their stance known. There are teams, and by the way, the most embarrassing part of this is probably trying to do all of this and not even getting Deshaun Watson. So let's not let the Atlanta Falcons, Carolina Panthers, New Orleans Saints off the hook here. They were going after him too. The Indianapolis Colts tried to meet with him. The Texans said no because they had they didn't want him in the division. Okay, so put those teams on the list. There were probably other teams that called that didn't get on a list. So let's put those guys in this bucket as well. But I just think there's sometimes where everything a franchise says about doing due diligence, about accountability, about culture, whatever it is, they do this stuff and you get to say, oh, good, I can never take them seriously again. I'm glad we got that out of the way. I don't have to listen to this franchise anymore.
Yeah, it seems pretty shameless. Just the act of going from immediately being, you know, cleared of criminal charges to immediately being in charge of the situation himself and selling himself to these other
most leverage in NFL history.
Yeah, and So I immediately started to wonder, like, how is that even just so possible? And where can we get to a point where this can change? And part of it to me, and I think it seems pretty simple, but, you know, I compared it to like the NFL, where we have Russell Westbrook talking about how his family is, you know, suffering because he can't go to home games because fans are mocking him for calling him West Brick. It feels like NFL players are far too insulated. And I know this isn't like the answer here, bring fans closer and let them yell at the players. But it does feel like they are entirely insulated from fans, from like on sometimes from media. They're protected by their PR teams. And they just find a way to stay away from all that criticism that frankly would make their lives kind of miserable. And I understand, you know, $240 million or however much it is going to, you know, ease some of that pain for you. But I do think that the accountability factor just isn't there for the players themselves. We're all sitting here talking about the Cleveland Browns don't deserve any fans and they're the ones who are going to be judged. Well, I think there should be some measure of something where the player themselves have to face what exactly the rest of the world, the rest of the viewing public is experiencing here, because I feel like they skate this entire time. And, you know, this comes with us probably a lengthy suspension for Deshaun Watson. And so the organization is still saying, hey, we might nuke our entire season. We're still willing to take on this player who we might lose fans over. And again, Deshaun Watson, in all likelihood, who knows what's going to happen with these civil cases? He might not skate whatsoever. But in terms of public opinion in the sports world that we're talking, it feels like these NFL players don't have to answer to a lot of the things that they do.
I think that football culture, Izzy, and that was a great point, football culture has built a system in which you can get away with any quote-unquote, any situation by calling it a distraction. You know, just putting it in that bucket and saying, well, it's a distraction, he's got to deal with it, it's off the field, all that stuff. And Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry in the first training camp press conference get to say, well, it's off the field, you know, it's a distraction, we can just keep moving on. They've built up a system where anything a coach doesn't like is a distraction, but so can the worst things in the world be a distraction, right? Anything a coach doesn't like, oh, whatever, you can just brand it that. And so the idea that we're not supposed to talk about off-the-field stuff at press conferences, the idea that we're not supposed to talk about off-the-field stuff during a game broadcast is a very football-specific thing. He's been dealing with some stuff this week. He's been dealing with he's got a lot of things to work through. Like, that could mean anything, and sometimes it means the worst stuff in the world. And so I think this is not a reckoning of football culture. Nothing will change. But it shines a light on kind of the system that's built up where you can get away with some things off the field because we're not supposed to talk about things off the field in football. We keep that out of the locker room. It's a ridiculous system. It needs a change.
And so the thing then becomes, how do we talk about this, right? And that's why, like, actually discussing why this is a story about more than just those 10 criminal charges in Texas, why that is incredibly relevant here. I mean, the reason to be horrified, Alabaster, you put a card down just about the restructuring or the very clever and extremely unsubtle structuring of this contract, why that is also insulting and why it should be insulting to the NFL league office also is because of the reality of this, because you have a guy who's faced dozens of allegations about sexual misconduct. And maybe at some point there's a bed of nails theory to the fact that it is so many, right? Like, at a certain point, what's the difference between 5 and 22? Well, the answer is 17, right? Like, we got to actually give a tonnage to the number here. And the number in the contract, Kevin, which, and all of this stuff, you know, is an NFL accounting story now too, but the Browns and Andrew Berry, they're a very smart and clever GM who decided to cover himself in the opposite of glory in doing this deal. He decided to go and pay Deshaun Watson $1 million guaranteed in year one, $45 million signing bonus, under the assumption that, as Izzy said, yeah, there'll be a penalty, there'll be a suspension, probably this coming year. And in that case, you have minimized the damage to Deshaun Watson personally. Every year subsequent to that, each of the 4 years, he gets paid the full $46 million, all of it guaranteed, all of it more than any amount we've ever seen. And I just wonder, if you're the NFL, right, beyond the question of how do you parse all of this very complicated legal vocabulary about what he was found to have allegedly not done versus done, there's also just the, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, this is a terrible look for the business of football because it does demand a response from the court of public opinion.
The switch that was flipped from last Friday, what, 8-10 days ago, where they were deciding whether or not the grand jury was going to indict. And a day later, everything had been, oh, it's normal. He's torn on his decision. Acting like it's LeBron going to South Beach, right? Like, what what, like, we moved so quickly past everything that it was offensive, and I think probably people in the league office were offended by it. The Browns, I'll use the word recklessness again, we don't know anything about, you know, if Deshaun Watson has one misstep, that's on the Browns. They've taken responsibility for Deshaun Watson for not only the next 5 years, but for the rest of his career, because they're the ones that decided that he was worth this gamble. I mean, the Panthers actually, you know, for all of their embarrassment, they decided not to guarantee 5 years and $230 million. The Browns are the team that took this leap. And so the guys who made this decision over the past week, this is on them for the next couple of years. And it's going, I don't know if the Browns did the calculus and understood the risk that they're taking going forward.
I would argue that's probably the best time ever to try to get away with something like this in terms of your fans, because, you know, the both sides of where we are. If you got the NFL treating this man like he deserves, like all this, care, and he deserves to be treated like this, and then the fans are going to be like, well, I mean, if they're doing it, that's all the argument I need. They know more than I do, so I'm just going to play oblivious here and play ignorant here and go ahead and cheer on my team. This isn't going to change anything. So, like, you're right, Kev. So I'm just wondering what is, like, where is the tipping point going to be, and what is it that these athletes have to sort of feel in order to feel sort of accountability for these acts?
Let's go back to the last segment. Where did Urban Meyer screw up? Not on anything off the field?
Yes.
Losing games.
Yes.
And losses. What is the tipping point for Deshaun Watson? The day Deshaun Watson stops being one of the best quarterbacks in football. However cynical you think football is, it is 100 times more cynical. No one cares about morality. I mean, it is one of the most cynical things I've ever seen in my life, this league. So whatever story you hear about the NFL, believe it. This is how business is done. It sucks, but this is how
business is done. What about free agent wide receivers? What about free agent offensive players? Can they show some moralities and say, I don't want to sign with Cleveland, and maybe that affects them? I mean, that's the biggest stretch I could come up with.
Izzy, this is discouraging, but there were two players, Jarvis Landry and another, blanking on the name, Jarvis Landry and somebody else, were ready to sign with Atlanta the minute Deshaun Watson went there. The opposite is actually happening. Guys want to go there because they want to play with the quarterback and get more money and get wins and all that stuff. This is eating its own tail.
Yeah, I think it is totally appropriate to be almost like nihilistically cynical about how the people who make decisions are operating here. But I also don't want to just entirely cede to cynicism how fans feel about this. Because I do think, you're right, Kevin, like the number one thing that's going to drive Deshaun Watson's approval rating, so to speak, is going to be how good is he on the field. That will determine the coverage. That will determine what amount of the pie chart is him being a top five hypothetical quarterback in the league versus him being Mr. 22, as it were, in the civil court system. And I just don't want to presume that everyone's going to get over this in the way that the people who make these decisions are. I mean, we have friends, giant Browns fans, who say very earnestly, I can't root for this team anymore. And I don't think this is going to erode the business of the NFL in a way that's going to cause the reckoning, Izzy, that you are looking for. But I do think it is, if not death by a thousand cuts, it's just a thousand cuts. You know, and that has to matter if you're trying to be a sport that wants to have all of these people in the biggest tent that exists, by the way, in American culture, period.
You can't just move on from this. And I think, or as much as, you know, the league and Deshaun Watson's folks are going to try to get you to move on from this. And so, yeah, it's somebody's responsibility to keep him honest or keep him on it and keep everybody else saying, hey, this continuously happened. And I think in a time that we are right now with sort of media being, you know, whoever decides to do some work, I do think that, yeah, you're probably going to get a lot of, whether it be reporting or whether it be just, you know, first person discussions or testimonials, there's going to be some stuff that probably should never go away for as long as Deshaun Watson is playing, unless it's actually settled somewhere. So, yeah, I think it's a lot of people's responsibility, ourselves included, to make sure that, again, he doesn't sort of get away with this and skate once the suspension and everything else and all the noise dies down.
Somebody with the team called me over the weekend, and they said kind of what you're saying, Pablo, which is, do you think if you stack all these things on top of each other that eventually it hurts the popularity of the league with anybody? And they brought up boxing. I'm a huge boxing fan, and this person knew that. And I said, listen, boxing is the most immoral, corrupt place on the planet. But the reason that boxing faded in popularity is not because of that. It's because it didn't give the viewer what they wanted. And unfortunately, we talk about all of this stuff, and you know how the league office is going to react? They're going to give the Browns primetime games, and people are going to watch it. And they're going to go to Houston this year, and people are going to watch it. And the NFL can capitalize on this in the most cynical way, and they will, because that's just sort of what America watches. The NFL is the last thing Americans do in mass, because the NFL knows how to market it. And as discouraging as it is, this will, in a roundabout way, be marketed.
Yeah, no, the monoculture, you're right. We talked about The Sopranos. We talked about Squid Game. None of them compared to the relative power over the American attention span that the NFL holds. And that's why all of this, by the way, does feel like worthy of emotion and analysis, right? This stuff matters. You know, Kevin, is he, both of you guys, I don't know of another cultural space where we talk about serious things in a way that has stakes that doesn't bore people to death immediately. And granted, this segment conceptually may be more boring than the Urban Meyer one we just did on the purely just like, I get it, right? You don't want to be scolded. But it matters, because if we don't discuss it here, I don't know if there's a platform that's as elevated where this can be discussed.
Well, I can't keep, like, just keep thinking about an NBA superstar, like a top five NBA player going through this exact same situation and then hitting a road game like a week later. Like, that would be an unbelievable experience. Like, that road crowd would have to treat him horribly. Like, I just don't see that happening in an NFL game again. And so, yeah, I think the idea of just forcing us to discuss it, I think, is probably the best way to really show what the audience is thinking about this. Because if you get them to talk about it in any sort of way, what are they going to say? Like, how are they going to back him, right? So, of course, they feel this way about it, just trying to find ways to avoid it.
Izzy, just to your point, to clean this up a tiny bit, this, in a way, shows how far we have come as a sports media and stuff, because it's obviously not the same, but Kobe Bryant did go through something where there was a criminal and civil sexual assault case in Ohio, and he played through the season with the Lakers and was flying on the Lakers team plane from Colorado to Los Angeles to wherever to play games the same day. And
no, right. That is the one example. That's the one example, and it just goes to show you, hey, how we've evolved. You're right in terms of coverage, but also we're talking about, you know, people that can, and look, this is going to sound, but people can sort of negotiate with themselves and figure out, okay, if it's one case, one situation. With Deshaun Watson, you're talking about 22 cases here. Well, you're talking about a pattern of behavior here.
There's something to the idea of power, right? Like, power is such a theme in this story in terms of what you can infer from what Deshaun Watson was enjoying about 40 plus different masseuses to what he is now receiving from the Cleveland Browns at the center of a series of scandals unlike anything that we've seen in genre, which is distinguished from Kobe Bryant. Because, yes, Kevin, to me, look, it's the most cynical take. If you're like Deshaun Watson's reps, right, is to be like, you guys got over it with Kobe. And so why are you holding this guy to the fire in any way that's different? And that's where you have to explain what the story is and why it's particularly disturbing and what is happening as a result. Because, yeah, it's not apples to apples. And also, there are details here that I think can be fairly horrifying if presented accurately and journalistically.
And this is not fair, but I think a part of the element also is the changing teams thing, right? Where Kobe had the support of those around him. Whether it was deserved or not, Kobe still had that LA love and had that support. Now you're talking about an entirely new fan base having to adapt this fandom, adopt this fandom for a guy who, you know, they probably have a million questions.
There was no law that said the Browns had to take this chance. And a bunch of Browns fans were just sitting around on Twitter going, wait, we're involved in this now? Okay. Like that's a great point.
No, they were in, right? I mean, they were in, then they were out, and then they were in again, because I get the last thing here, Alabaster, is just usually when there's a giant criminal investigation and civil lawsuit scandal, right? It's seen as a market inefficiency. Right. Who will be the one to push the envelope and take advantage of the fact that there is not a bidding war? This ended up being a bidding war that the Browns won going away. And there was reporting I just saw that, you know, maybe 13 teams at the outset were interested. The Browns were out, then in. You know, like that's the other aspect as to what the market is like in a very cynical world.
Can I say
can one? Can we also not let the Dolphins skate for wanting to be the first team in on this? Yeah. That's all.
Let's not let the Dolphins skate for a lot of things, by the way. But that's a separate thing. I will say, Pablo, you mentioned the monoculture thing and how, you know, this is what America does. We watch football. Does it make it more admirable then that Urban Meyer had no idea what was going on?
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. He's an artist, Kevin. He's an artist.
He was the one guy.
He didn't have
on
time
Sunday
for your like, mainstream media.
You know what? Maybe he was boycotting. Maybe Urban Meyer was boycotting the NFL, and that's why he didn't know anything. He was the one moral guy.
You know what? He was the change we want to believe in, Alabaster. And I think we should reframe the Urban Meyer story and our whole A block around that notion now.
Urban Meyer, too woke. Okay.
You know, it really makes you think. All right, we're going to move on and skip. We're going to do a topic on Baker Mayfield, but I think we can all agree that we don't need to talk about.
He'll be back in our show, maybe not in Cleveland, but he'll be back to be discussed.
When Baker Mayfield, you know, the 15th to 18th best quarterback in the NFL gets traded in a couple weeks, we'll talk about him then. For now, we're going to talk about Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers. And we talk a lot about Aaron Rodgers' feelings, and we're going to stick with that trope. How should Aaron Rodgers feel about Devontae Adams signing with the Raiders?
Kevin, I want your insight on this as someone who makes calls to, like, check feelings, because I just laughed when I saw that Devontae Adams became the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And yeah, Aaron Rodgers lost his human binky. I thought the whole deal was that he was coming back because he wanted Devontae back. And no, his binky is gone. And so what actually happened here?
How should he feel? He should feel included because he knew about this. That was the whole thing last year, is I'm not involved in free agent decisions. I'm not involved in trade decisions. I want to be in the front office. I want to act like an assistant GM. Well, he knew about it. And he knew about this deal when he signed his extension. He's not going to retire. There was that weird Twitter trope. Oh, man, he's going to back out. You're a moron if you think Aaron Rodgers didn't know about this weeks ago. And so how does he feel? Well, no one in the NFL had more targets last year as a percentage of their plays than Devontae Adams. Over a third of the time that Devontae Adams went out for a pass, he was targeted. That's ludicrous. That's Shaq, okay? That's Drew Timmy, right? Like that is some unbelievable stuff. And so it's not just the fact that they play a two-man game, it's the route diversity. I think I saw a stat in 2020 that he was the only player who had 10 catches on 7 different routes. They're going to have to change their entire offense. This is on Matt LaFleur, and this is on Aaron Rodgers to figure out, okay, we still have Alan Lazard. They'll probably draft a wide receiver with one of the Raiders' picks. Devontae Adams is one of the best players in football. Wide receiver is probably the second most valuable position in football. This is a pressurized situation now because they've got to figure out what this offense looks like. Matt LaFleur has not coached the Packers for a long period of time without Devontae Adams. This matters.
I got a question for you, Kev, but first I'm going to take a moment to just get over the fact that you put Shaq and Drew Timmy in the
I was going to say, that what a weekend for Drew Timmy. You know, wins 2 games in the tournament, gets compared to Shaq by Kevin Clark. Just a great
usage rate, baby.
Time
in his life. Usage rate.
But what are we saying here, then? If Aaron Rodgers knew this, and he signed the big deal anyway, then what? I know that's a different game, Alabaster. Don't get mad at me.
No.
But if, then what?
It's a great question. But, so, the Packers offered Devontae Adams more money than the Raiders ended up giving him, okay? Devontae Adams played in college with Derek Carr. Aaron Rodgers should be hurt because Devontae Adams said, I actually am better friends with Derek Carr.
That's Kevin. That's part of like the fun of this story to me is that I actually realized that I have no idea who's friends in real life with each other. Because I was like, I didn't even know that. You guys were friends this whole time? Devontae Adams and Derek Carr were just boys?
They're like best friends,
You guys were posting memes, Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, like Last Dance meme, that it turns out only one of you took that seriously, and it's not the guy I thought would take it seriously. Like, it's just funny to actually realize, oh, right, these are real three-dimensional people who don't actually conform to my caricatures.
Devontae Adams pulled I don't have friends, I have family on Aaron Rodgers and just left. It was one for Rodgers because I think Rodgers likes to think, and I think he is. I think he has these close friends in Green Bay, got these guys, and I think that in Green Bay, you really, you know, it's not a huge nightlife spot. Like, you really only have each other. So if you've got 6 friends in the locker room and then you lose one of them, that's like a huge blow to your social circle in Green Bay. And now to find out that he didn't even want to be there, this is tough, man. It's like when a friend
Devontae
moves
Adams,
away.
Like,
go ahead.
No, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's like when a friend moves away and you never talk to them again, and you're like, oh, wow, like, I actually wasn't friends with that person? This is tough. Yeah.
I mean, Devontae Adams likes him because he could get him to a 99 rating on Madden, not because, you know, they were best friends. And I think Aaron Rodgers seemed to sort of misconstrue that relationship. I think Derek Carr can get him the ball plenty and, you know, make him the superstar, continue to be the superstar that he is. But it just makes you wonder, because you go into this the offseason thinking, okay, there's no way that Aaron Rodgers is going to re-sign there unless he's assured that Devontae Adams will also. But then he just sort of took the gamble and said, hey, will he play for the franchise? Nope. Okay. But then now what? Like, is Aaron just really upset? Is he just happy that he's, you know, got this contract? Is he going to get like a draft pick and a couple other free agent signings to make up for it and be okay with it? Like, this doesn't feel like it's playing out the way we expected it to for Aaron.
Last year, Aaron Rodgers said, guys are coming to Green Bay to play with me. He's got to be a recruiter now. He's got to have guys come play with him. And there are other quarterbacks, and we already saw this, and Von Miller wanted to go to Buffalo to be around Josh Allen. A couple of guys have already gone to Denver because they say that that's a team on the upswing because Russell Wilson's already there. Where is Rodgers' recruiting prowess showing up at this point? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I guess
Al Bester and Julio Jones probably.
I hope so. That'd be great. But I just don't know.
It does seem to boil down to, man, Aaron Rodgers does need more friends. Like, that through line does seem to carry itself to the present day.
Cole Beasley's a free agent. Maybe a good fit with Aaron Rodgers. Really makes you think.
Culture
fit.
A
feature on a track for Aaron Rodgers if he wants it. Yeah.
All right, guys, let's move on to our final topic, and we will talk about the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Which happened this past weekend and is still going on. And our question, after the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, who are you picking to win it all?
What a terrible question.
It is. You know, isn't this what I love about the NCAA tournament, especially after the first weekend? It's, you know, even if you hadn't been watching college basketball the whole time, you're going to be an expert on whoever you watched that weekend.
Yep.
So whoever your favorite is, if you happen to watch Kansas, boom, Kansas is your team. You're going to tell me everything about. You happen to watch Gonzaga, oh, Drew Timmy in that second half. Oh, if he does that again, nobody's going to stop
him.
And frankly, that's my answer.
Half.
My answer is Gonzaga and Drew Timmy. Frankly, because I did watch some of these other games and nobody stood out. Gonzaga didn't stand out. But Memphis, as a group of individuals, really good basketball team. And so they gave Gonzaga everything they can, you know, could offer. And I didn't think Drew had that in him offensively to just take over a game against a really good team. And, you know, he did, frankly, just kept getting buckets. And so that's going to be my guess right now. But, heck, if I would have watched, you know, Arizona last night against TCU a little bit harder, maybe they would. And, frankly, Arizona was my pick to win it all. So I've actually changed that now after the first weekend.
So the Arizona game was incredible. I mean, I think we can talk about that in a second here. But just to further substantiate, Kevin, your Shaq analogy, which I understand is based on usage rate and not actually how good they are as, like, specimens in the game of basketball, Drew Timmy, like, beat, you know, he didn't beat his own teammate, but he was on a floor with two lottery picks in this year's draft coming up, Chet Holmgren and the dude from Memphis, Jalen Duren. And he was better than both of them by a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they turned to him to score like a dozen straight points to start the second half. And if college basketball is about anything, and this is why I do still get sucked into March Madness, despite the fact that it's impossible to predict and basically an engineered chaos exercise, right? It's not actually about who's the best. It's just give us entertainment. The reason I love it is because it gives us people who are having the literal best time of their lives right now.
Yes.
It will never be better for a subset of the people we're watching in this tournament. Drew Timmy is one of those guys. Edert on St. Peter's, the mustache dude who's a bench player who just ended up being like this another cult figure. I love the people who are loving their lives right now more than anybody else. And that's how I choose to watch this tournament.
I saw Jacoby in the hallway here earlier, and I went to University of Miami, and he was asking about Miami, and we were talking about the guards and all of that stuff. And then afterwards, I was like, well, I don't know how they match up with Kansas. I don't watch college basketball. And Jacoby was like, yeah, I don't know anything either. And we had this, like, 10-minute discussion beforehand where we're just, like, deep in the weeds on college basketball. And then at the end of it, we revealed to each other, we don't watch college basketball. So that is the perfect emblem of what you were saying.
Yeah.
I will say this about Miami. I'm picking Gonzaga as well. They're the only team that looks complete to me and hasn't had a really bad misstep
team.
That has made me rethink everything. I really like this Miami team, Izzy. Everybody's 24 and has transferred three times, something I can relate to. I mean, who, you know, listen, everybody ends up in Miami, right? Eventually, Charlie Moore transferred, I think, four times or something. He's playing point guard for them. Yes, he's 2 years older than anybody else at that college.
His bio looks like an NFL journeyman, like an NBA journeyman, rather. It's just like 5 years and five different teams. It's amazing.
They never choke because they know what to do because they've been playing college basketball for 30 years, the entire team. Jim Larrañaga, he barely calls plays, but somehow this all works. It's just a veteran team. They don't have any bigs. They can, I guess they can get by Iowa State. I think they match up okay with Kansas. Like, I thought they were going to lose to USC because USC had the fourth tallest lineup in the country. I thought they were going to lose to Auburn because they had two essentially NBA pros who are taller than Miami's tallest guy. Something weird is happening.
Supposed to be the number one pick in the draft on Auburn.
Yeah, not anymore. He got dunked
by,
on.
Like 12. Yeah,
he's going to play
Isaiah
in China
Wong,
after
which...
that. So it's something weird's going on in Miami, and I'm almost buying in, but Gonzaga's still my pick.
And Larrañaga has these teams that kind of come out of nowhere, not necessarily in the tournament. Sometimes they come out of nowhere for the season, right? Because you didn't really predict it at the season started. But this team has some balance there. And, you know, the more you watch, the more you realize, man, if one or two of these guys just sort of comes up and has a good game because they have that ability, it's not like they have to play out of their mind, then, yeah, I really like what you
have. Wait. Alabaster, are we really doing University of Miami basketball culture? Is that where we just got
That's
to that
exactly
place?
What we're That's doing. What we're doing.
I'm listening to these cliches get spouted
it's
about
down
never
to, how close is it?
And Jim Larrañaga.
Is it? I'm we like, have heat culture just up the road on 95, or you can just take one, whatever. And there's just a little bit of a drive, a little bit of a drive to Cane's culture. And I'm saying it's very similar.
This is actually, right. I mean, it's a little bit of a, more of a drive because I'm a Gator, so I'm not even actually into Cane's culture here. But, you know, my coach has just went to Georgia for some reason. Doesn't even make any sense. So, yeah, I'm in on UM.
Having all transfers really is the college version of heat culture. You know,
isn't it
Dwayne
sustainable
Wade,
though?
Heat
like someone
lifer.
Was asking over the weekend, they were like, isn't it weird that this is that they're all seniors and they're all 24, 25 years old? And I was like, well, maybe that should just be some team's shtick from now on, is just finding the eighth guy on 10 different teams and never having a permanent roster. Just make it like a boy band. Just put them together and say, you guys go meet, go play
Diamonds
college basketball.
In the rust.
No, we're gonna make the band every year.
Yes.
None of you guys will have ever played instruments or music together. You're way too old for this. You're clearly not a person with a future in a real way. But right now, yeah, you can get me that junior's cheesecake across the bridge and live the dream that is March Madness.
I wouldn't. Yeah, and Drew Timmy is that exact person that I will always think of for the rest of time as the person just kind of maxing out.
Like
even though it's not, like he's going to be in the NBA, but yeah, it might not.
No,
get
he will
than
be,
that,
and he'll be a first rounder, sure. But like in the way that Frank Kaminsky, who I love, was a first rounder, just like these guys who like were made for this, and unfortunately, their lives are going to get worse every day that they are removed from the time they like lick their own mustache after draining a three on Memphis. Like, yeah, it's not going to be as good. Wait, what's happening?
Sorry, I have to stop. I started counting down too early, but our friend Long Live the Queen did tweet in saying,
pause the countdown.
Kevin and Jacoby talking about college basketball players is like Urban Meyer talking about NFL players. Who is that guy?
There you go.
That's true.
You've got a future in coaching, Kev.
That's
college
true.
Basketball, that is.
I know culture. I just came up with the That's best right. college basketball culture idea of the last 30 years. You just get old guys.
Just, ooh, yeah. Pablo, Heat Sixers tonight.
Oh boy.
In Philly.
Oh boy. I can't
Hang
wait.
On to your butts.
All of that culture. All of that culture. Just. Culture's also like a synonym for like what happens when you grow fungus, by the way. People don't talk about that part of the vocabulary enough. It's just like super gross and refuses to die.
Experiments.
And is just way more dangerous than you would think. Yeah.